Hey, this is Christian with the Most High Show, and today joining me is Kat Kim. She is a spiritual teacher, a convicted drug offender, an ex-crack addict, and she's currently doing coaching for women to find divine confidence. And so we have a conversation talking about culture, spirituality, recovery. It's all good stuff, and I believe it will all be helpful to you and your journey towards wholeness. So this is the Most High Show.
Welcome to the Most High Show, a show about recovery, spirituality, and all that. Produced, posted, and hosted by people in recovery who have strength and hope and want to share it with you. If you or someone you love is suffering, we want you to know you are not alone. This is the Most High Show.
Before we get into your history, can you tell me a little bit about what's a day in the life like for Kat, and what's your life like now and today?
Now and today, it's very different from what it used to be. I wake up in the morning. I have an hour of spiritual practice, and for me, it depends on what I'm being called to in that moment. Sometimes it's meditation, sometimes it's reading, sometimes it's prayer, sometimes it's journaling. But that part of the morning is super important for me. And then I'm getting into a meeting with my assistant. I'm getting into creating work. I started the School of Divine Confidence. And so there's programs and there's training that I'm putting together. I'm talking to my clients, and I'm constantly thinking of ways to spread the message that I feel like I'm being called to share. Mm-hmm. And in between all of that, there's a lot of grappling. There's a lot of grappling between me as an entrepreneur, me as a spiritual teacher, and me as a Korean, and me as an American as well. There's all these intersections that come together, and there's no one way to be in all of it.
Yeah.
And in many cases, those four, Korean, American, and then spiritual teacher, and then an entrepreneur, all of those require different values and different ways of being. So it's a lot of grappling between all of those things. But like you said, I don't do things simply. I love the challenge, and I wouldn't have it any other way. I think that's the other thing too. Like, I realized part of why I fell into addiction and why I have such addictive behaviors is I need a mental stimulation. I need it. I crave mental stimulation. And if I'm not given that, or if I'm not doing it in a healthy way, I will find a way to do it in an unhealthy way.
Oh yeah. And you mentioned clients. So what's a client? Like, what's that relationship like? What services are you offering?
Yeah, sure. I work with rising women leaders, spiritual seekers, and change makers. I provide spiritual training and confidence coaching to people who just know in their bones that they're being called to do something important, but they find themselves holding back or playing small. I help them kind of get really clear on what that calling is. And then through the course of working together, we work through the stuff, the shit that comes up, the mindset issues, the depression, the, insecurities, all of that.
Yeah. That word, like coach, like I'm a coach, right? Like everyone uses that and they throw it out there, but what's that process for you to get to a place where you feel confident that you can be a guide and a help to somebody, to a woman who feels like they're being called to more and they want to achieve that? What's that process like for you to get to that place where, okay, I can do this call and I can actually be effective?
Yeah. Do you want to hear where it all began? There's a story. There's a story behind all of this.
Yeah, I love it.
So when I was 6 years old, my mom began feeding me diet pills. And I was barely tall enough to even like see over the countertop, the kitchen countertop. I remember at 6 years old, we would stand in the kitchen together at the countertop, and she would be cutting something on a board. And I'm, just barely tall enough. So I'm like this, looking up at her. And I asked her one day, "What are you doing?" And she's like, "I'm cutting, I'm going to give you some medicine." And I was like, what is it for? And she's like, it's for weight loss. You know, you have to lose weight. And I asked her, why are you cutting it? And she said, well, these are for adults and you're just a child. So you only need half of it. And that's just something I didn't even question it at that time. I didn't think, oh, there must be something wrong with this whole scene. And what the fuck is wrong with you, mom? Like, none of that. I just accepted that there was something wrong with me and I need to be fixed and I need some pill or something outside of me to do it.
Yeah.
Wow. And this kind of was like the beginning of a lifelong struggle of low self-confidence, horrible body image, lack of self-worth. And I also grew up in a really emotionally and physically abusive environment. Mm. And so I started rebelling at a really young age. At 13, I started smoking pot. At 16, I started doing hardcore drugs. And then by 18, I was dealing cocaine.
Whoa.
And by that time, I had dropped out of high school. I was dealing cocaine. I was transporting it from Washington State to California on the plane.
Oh.
And one day I was caught. I was handcuffed. I was put behind bars in Oakland, California, of all places.
Nice.
I
mean, yeah.
Oakland at that time was notorious for its high rates of violent crimes and homicides. And I was right there in the middle of all of that, you know? Mm. And you would think this was my wake-up call. You'd think.
Yeah.
But it wasn't. I was absolutely fearless. And it wasn't the type of fearlessness that comes from courage, you know, courage, the root word of courage, cur is heart. It wasn't that type of fearlessness. It was the type of fearlessness that comes from not giving a shit about yourself, your body, your future. I had no regard. I was not scared, but it was not a good kind of not scared. It was the bad kind where I could have continued on this path and would have not cared. And in fact, while I was in jail, I was trying to make drug deals. Mm. I was like, okay, I'm here. I'm sure there's somebody else here that's, you know, slanging. Let's get some, you know, deals going on here. Mm. And, you know, when I was caught, I was suddenly facing, you know, 3 years in state prison. I was given the option, if I pleaded guilty, that I could go to rehab. And I was like, okay, let's just do that. You know, so I pleaded guilty. I went to rehab for 1.5, 2 years. And, you know, I cleaned up the drugs eventually after that. And, but it didn't clear, or I didn't heal that fundamental belief that I believed and I accepted to be true about myself, that I'm not good enough, I'm ugly, I'm fat, I'm unworthy, and no one wants me. Mm-hmm. So that continued with me. And instead of manifesting as drug addiction, it manifested as relationships with really, really toxic, abusive men. Mm. And this entire time, Christian, I walked around like I was the ugliest, meanest bitch in town. I mean, I didn't take care of myself. And I was a bully at times. That's probably the most shameful part of my story when I think back. Of those times when I was being mean to other people and lashing out, being a bully. And it really wasn't until many years after jail that I was walking down my apartment hallway. I was living with an ex-boyfriend at that time. I was absolutely depressed. I would sleep all day on the couch, and you know, in the middle of the, like 3 p.m., I wake up and I'm trying to move and my arms are like pinned down to the side. And I remember I just like woke up and I couldn't even lift my arms. I was just wallowing in toxicity. It was a horrible time in my life. And one day I was walking down my apartment hallway and there's to the elevator, and across from the elevator door, there's this big, huge mirror on the wall. Hanging on the wall across from the elevator door, and I'm walking towards, I looked up to the mirror, and I caught a glimpse of somebody that was standing there. And she was wearing big baggy like sweats, and her hair was unkempt and her face was really swollen. It was like red and puffy. And I looked at her and I just was like, oh my God, at least I'm not that bad. Mm. You know, and it was like a moment, even wallowing in my own toxicity and depression and pain and suffering. I saw her and I was like, at least I'm not that bad. And then it hit me like a ton of bricks. There was nobody else in that hallway. Mm. And it was me. I had saw an image of myself. And I realized like I had become so disconnected with the woman that I dreamt of being and the person that I was being that I didn't recognize myself when I saw myself in the mirror.
Wow.
And that was my wake-up call finally, because the woman that I wanted to be was beautiful. She was a leader. She was making an impact. She was transforming lives, you know? And she would walk into a room and people would notice her, not for how she looked, but for like her presence, for her confidence. And this sounds really dramatic, but this is the absolute truth. I got into that elevator door, into the elevator. I'm looking at myself in the mirror, you know, across from me. And as the elevator door is closing like this, I'm like, this is it. That's it. This is the moment that I changed myself.
Wow.
And that was the moment I decided I would do everything it takes to become that woman. And, you know, I began studying everything under the sun, because at that time I was nothing close to that woman. That was a secret burning desire. That's something I would not even tell anybody because I was afraid people would laugh at me. Oh, you want to be beautiful? Look at you. There's no way. You know, you want to be a leader? What are you doing with your life right now?
Yeah.
You know, you want to make an impact? Look, you're such a loser. I mean, I was broke. I was with a man. He was the one that was supporting me. I had dropped out of high school. I was a convicted drug offender. Come on.
Yeah, right.
Like, you want to be all that? No way.
Yeah.
So that had a secret burning desire inside of me that was so vulnerable, so sensitive that I couldn't tell anybody about this dream. But so I began studying everything under the sun, Christian. I became a certified image consultant, where I studied like makeup and hair and like style and how do you accentuate the best parts of your face and your body and all that. And then I became a nationally certified personal trainer, because I wanted to understand like what your physical body goes through to undergo transformation. And then I became a life coach, a transformational life coach. I studied 3 years to understand like how our mind and what we think is really connected to our behaviors and our results.
Yeah.
And this obsession, again, very addictive behavior with me, this obsession with transformation on the outside, interestingly, took me deeper and deeper and deeper inside into this world of spirituality and quantum physics and metaphysics, and where I began to see that, oh my God, everything that we see in this physical world, there is an equivalent to that in the non-physical world. Mm-hmm. And I became obsessed again about understanding that and learning about that. And so my spiritual path and my spiritual journey took me down this route this transformational journey took me down this route of spiritual study that I had no idea that it would even take me there. And I became a licensed spiritual practitioner. And really, I dedicated my life to helping other people understand their personal power and go through these incredible transformations like I have.
Wow. So you didn't just buy a domain name and put up a website and start taking coaching clients? it took you a little while to get there. But I think
took me a long time.
But what you're describing is, you know, the concept of like, you know, you're giving your pain purpose, right? Like, and that's that's so important for people like us who have a past, who have this kind of version of ourself that we know the capacity, the propensity for self-destruction, violence, and all these things that we can easily become or have been, right?
Yeah.
And understanding that side, right? It's almost like It's like the pathway to ascension is actually dissension first, right?
Oh,
you cannot ascend until you've descended. And a lot of people want to bypass the dissension and go right to ascension. And it's just, unfortunately, I just don't think it works if you're talking about spiritual law or, you know, scientific law, right?
That's, you know, I talk about this a lot too in my training, is because it's like what you say is it's cyclical. Transformation is cyclical and life is cyclical. And we have this idea that it's linear. Like we go from point A to point B and success looks like this straight line, or transformation looks like this straight line. But it's actually very cyclical. You're going in around, you're going up and down and backwards many times and then back up, and it never ends, this beautiful cycle. And it's a cycle of life. We see this cycle. We see things arise and fall. It's the law of impermanence.
Yeah.
There's nothing in life that does not fall after arising. Everything arises and falls in life. You can look at nature. You can look at civilizations. You can look at government. You can look at life. You can look at plants. You can look at youth. Youth, we don't remain youthful forever. We grow, we grow strong. And then at one point we're going to decline and then we're going to die. And it's, you know, it's when we try to hold on to a certain area of this or when we try to stop it and prevent it, that that's where we cause suffering. That's where the suffering comes from, is when we're trying to stop this cycle from happening, when it's this beautiful thing that unfolds naturally, you know? So imagine just like going with that beautiful cycle, women's cycle. This is a thing for women, you know, the women's period, the women's, can I talk about this stuff? Because this is like a legit thing. Like people, men and women, we have all learned to demonize the woman's cycle. And if you hear women talking about it, we're like, oh man, I got my fucking period now. And, all this and all. But actually, this, because of this cycle that the woman goes through, we as a woman can create the most beautiful thing in life ever. The most complex, most beautiful thing, which is that of another human life. And if you think about it, other than having the act of sex, the woman's body does not have to do a damn thing to create this beautiful thing, you know? And that's all part of the what manifests because of these beautiful cycles in life.
Absolutely. That's really good.
I'm excited about this.
No, I love it. I love your energy with it. Two days ago, I had a very sad day. I was just sad, you know? And I had an appointment with my coach, who's also like my, he's also a counselor. And so it's great because I go to him with all my entrepreneurial drama, and it's all connected to my own personal drama and my own character defects and all this stuff. So when I go to see him, I'm able to talk about it all, right? And I remember thinking, as he's not far from me and I'm walking to the session, and I'm thinking, how many dark nights of the soul do I have to freaking have? Like, I'm so over the these dark, deep moments, right? And I was listening to a Ram Dass lecture, and he was saying, he made this observation, which is, why do we think that these moments when, like, you and I are together here, we're having a great conversation, and this is grace, and this is love, and this is light, and all this stuff. But why do we think these dark moments, these moments of sadness, these moments of despair, are any less of a grace, right? Or any less of a privilege? And it's one thing to say it, right? And to philosophically have a conversation about it. And it's another thing to actually live it. Because when you, if you actually live it, then, you know, it, you'd have to embrace the suck in a way, right? You have to embrace it and truly accept it. And I think, and that's what I think I've learned in continued sobriety, is like, like that day I was sad and didn't feel good. So what did I just, I made some music instead, you know? I had some work I needed to do, but I'm like, you know, I'm gonna make some music. I got my coaching. I'm going to go to my coaching. I had some calls I needed to make. I made my calls, you know, I didn't check out of reality. And I just kind of went through that process. And I think that's a piece that, a lot of us don't want to go through. We don't want to go through that pain. And I think the other thing too is community. Like I think I was on the phone for a couple times that day, right? talking to another person, having them mirror back to me. I felt like that, or yesterday was a day like that for me, you know, and ultimately, have you done any studying on the Enneagram at all?
I've done a little bit. I think I'm a three.
A three? So I'm a four, which is creative. Oh, okay. And so he said, and I love how he always brings you back to the Enneagram. He says, you're a four, so you're creative, but on the quote unquote negative side of the four is melancholy, right? It's just boredom, just like, I'm over it all. And I was very much in that state of mind.
Yeah.
And he says, the thing that pulls you out of melancholy is being creative. So he's like, just go through today. He's like, if you were this way for a year straight, maybe you need to sell everything and go live on a ranch somewhere. But he's like, you're having a day. So embrace it, and tomorrow will be better. And that was so key to hear that back from a coach, right?
Yeah.
Like, I pay money for that coach, right? And it's like everyone thinks, like, I can't afford it. And I have a lot of real estate clients in my professional world, and they all have real estate coaches. And some of them have spent hundreds of thousands of dollars with their real estate coach over the course of 20 years of real estate.
Yeah.
But the reality is, without that coach, right, they wouldn't even be in the positions. Like, you can't afford to not have a coach. And so I think it's really important that you're offering it. And then the thing that what you're offering is so specific, right? And, you know, like, the thing about, I have two daughters, right? And and I have,
how old are they?
They're 19 and 14.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And they're pretty powerful humans. But I do know that, like, for a woman, there are a lot of obstacles that that you have to go through, you know, and there's a lot of things in place and just the way that men accept women and the way that society accepts women and and those kind of things. So there are very specific things that a woman has to deal with internally, you know. So it's, I love that you're doing that kind of work and you're focusing and you're using this transformation that you had to go through. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, our society and our culture has really demonized anything that's not positive. So if you're having a bad day, if you're having bad feelings, if you're in depression, if you're feeling rage, if you don't feel okay, then there's something wrong with you.
Yeah.
Right. And that's one level. But then the shame underneath that, I mean, that's just something that's not acceptable in our culture. So, you know, a question that I began asking myself a long time ago, which is something that I still ask myself, that helps me to kind of get myself it almost plucks me out of the shame or guilt that I'm feeling about something. What I asked myself at that time was, okay, so I'm a high school dropout. I'm a convicted drug offender. I don't have any money. I'm broke as fuck. I'm ugly. Like, all of these things, you know, we can get into that space of all the things that are wrong with us.
Yeah.
And I learned to ask myself this one question. And this question is, what needs to happen in the future? Or what do I need to create in the future as a result of this moment, such that when I look back at this, I will be grateful that it happened.
Yeah.
That I will be so grateful that I will not have changed a thing about this. Because in other words, how am I going to take this moment and create something so extraordinary in the future that I'm going to be like, oh, actually, I'm really glad that happened because look at me now, bitches, you know? And that was exactly the thing I saw. I saw myself on stage. I saw myself speaking to people. I saw myself transforming lives and telling my story. That was what came to me.
Yeah.
And for me, that was like, you know, I didn't even know it at that time because I didn't believe in God or I didn't even know spirituality. But that was a question that I put out to myself or whoever at that time. And that was an answer from God. You know, I was like, this is it.
Yeah.
This is what I want to call you into.
Wow.
This is your calling.
Yeah.
And so that's how I began to see this vision of myself. And I held strong to that vision. But again, at that time, it was something that I was so like, there's no, how do I make that happen?
Right.
How? There's no way.
Yeah.
And that's also a question I still ask myself today, when, you know, just because I'm a coach doesn't mean I don't have problems. I got issues with my family. You know, there's stuff. Addiction doesn't end when the bad habit ends. There's a ripple effect. There's a ripple effect that impacts generations and generations to come.
Absolutely.
So the addictions of my father and my brothers and myself, they've all these ripple effects that I'm dealing with now. And so when it becomes really, when it gets really hard for me now, I ask myself that question again. Yeah. Okay. How am I going to take this thing and what am I going to create in the future such that when I look back at this, I'm going to be like, wow, I'm so glad that happened. Absolutely. Look at me now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You mentioned the call, right? A couple times. And so I want to talk about the call a little bit. Because I think that it's, you know, it's, so we, let me think about how I could phrase this or word this. So like, you know, the thought of the call, right? You know, and you hear like, oh, I have a call to preach, or I have a call to, you know, everyone wants, so there's two things I want to talk about when I talk about the call. So number one is everyone wants to be called to the stage, right?
Yeah.
Everyone wants to be called to glory, right? But it's like, what happens if you're being called to just like serve and love another person that you live with, right?
Yeah.
Or you're being called to deal with the wreckage of your past, right? And I think that's, what do you have anything to say about that? Like that kind of like the concept is like, okay, there's this call to be great, but then what if the call is something much more simple? Am I willing to accept it at that level?
Well, even that's great though, to reconcile things with your family or, you know, being called to start a family and create a beautiful environment. That's great as well.
Yeah.
That's the thing that I believe we need to, and I talk about, the consumer culture, the consumer capitalist culture, and how we've really fallen victim to its brainwashing in terms of what is actually great.
Right,
and what is it that we need to be doing? This, it, you know, and it's such a trap. And boy, do we have an epidemic of hundreds of thousands of millions of people who have fallen, you know, victim to this, it's like this system that wants us to continue to produce and consume and produce and consume.
Yeah.
The way and the only way that this consumer culture thrives is if we are constantly in this place of needing and wanting and producing and consuming. If we stop that, if we became self-sufficient, if we became self-confident, all of that, then this consumer culture would collapse literally. Right. So it's really important to become aware first of what's going on in our own world, but let's take a look and let's talk about this system that we're all a part of, right? And I'm not saying that we can't be, we have to totally disengage ourselves from it. It's impossible, but we can learn how to navigate ourselves around it. So this culture tells us, we have to be on a big stage. We have to have a nice car. We have to have big followings. We have to look a certain way.
Right.
That's the culture. So let's wake up to that and be like, no, I'm going to define what great means for me. That's going to be enough. For me, that's what I call divine confidence. Divine confidence comes from, you know, having an unshakable faith and knowing who you are and what you're here to do. Regardless of what people are telling you and regardless of what's going on in the world outside of you.
Absolutely. I think, and I think of like divine confidence is, there's some humility there, right?
Yeah.
And I heard Richard Rohr say something, once that he said that the common characteristic he found in very spiritual, humble people was, that they don't compare themselves to others, that's a common thing. He noticed about people who he revered as deeply spiritual or deeply humble. They just didn't compare themselves to other people.
Yeah.
You know, they have a work to do and they're doing it.
Do you know what I think? I think the key is this, is the people, and I do this too, right? I'm not free of this, but when we're comparing ourselves to others and what's out there, we are putting our attention towards what's out there, right? And we're giving our power away because we are allowing our environment, our culture, people outside of us to tell us what we need to do and what's great, right?
Right.
But the practice, the spiritual practice is always what? It's always to go back inwards.
Yeah.
you know, is to go back inwards. So, you know, this is a constant practice, right? So to bring your attention out from, this is what I help with my clients, is like, okay, you're feeling bad right now. Where's your attention right now? And then I help, you know, we guide them back to bringing their attention inwards, yeah, right into that heart center. And right there is where all the answers lie. You know, yeah, that's where God is. You right. know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Everything you have, everything you need, you have already within you.
Exactly.
Right? And so the second thing about the call, which is, mm-hmm, I think a more accurate description of what the call actually is a burden.
Mm. Oh, so, that's so good.
Yeah.
I love it.
So
yeah.
On Friday of last week, I was doing a video for Rotary International, and I had the honor of being a part of interviewing Ambassador Andrew Young. He used to be the mayor of Atlanta. He used to be a UN ambassador. He used to, you know, run the streets with Martin Luther King. So this is and what was interesting, we sat down for a 15-minute interview and ended up talking for 2 hours, right?
Yeah.
And one of the things he kept kind of coming back to, which was that you know, Martin Luther King didn't really want to be an activist, that he chose Birmingham as a place to go be a pastor because he thought this is the least controversial. And how he himself was like, I didn't want to preach, but I was put in this position. He's like, and I didn't want to do this. And it's like, but he kept kind of obeying the call or taking on the burden, you know, like doing what he knew he had to do. And it kept leading him to the next thing. And it was such it was so eye-opening. I mean, just sitting with him for 2 hours, it's like I left a little bit changed. Like,
wow.
Because it's like you could see, because there's nothing I am facing personally that is even close to what they had to face, you know,
right,
back in the civil rights and the courage it took for them to do all the things that they were doing, right? Like voter registration in a highly volatile city, right? Like, like he said, he's like, that was not something he wanted to do, you know, but he kind of got into these things. It's like, okay, we got to do this. And I think the people who really heed the call, right, and answer it and do those things that we look at and go, wow, I want to do something like that.
Yeah.
They're willing to place the burden and carry the weight. In a sense, right?
Like, that's beautiful. Yeah.
Do the work.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So it's really interesting. And I saw that you had written about something around like American spirituality and kind of, you know, kind of the drawbacks of American spirituality.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you know, I wrote an essay recently and I spoke to at the 2020 Centers for Spiritual Living Convention. I spoke in front of 600 ministers and spiritual leaders and practitioners. They were probably not expecting what I was about to come out of my mouth. But I wrote an essay, and this is what I talked about, and I call it consumer spirituality.
Yeah.
This consumer spirituality is really essentially the marriage between consumerism and spirituality.
Yeah.
It essentially just trains us to be better consumers,
right,
you know, and inadvertently perpetuates blind conformity to the dominating and oppressive structures of consumer capitalism.
Yeah.
And I was calling out to these ministers in this New Thought movement. I was like, y'all, you know, what are we teaching here?
Yeah.
And I was part of this too, you know, because primarily what we've been teaching is prosperity consciousness, how to manifest your biggest home, the most amount of money, right, and the best life ever.
Yeah.
And this was not blaming. This is also a result of the culture of consumer capitalism, consumer culture that we live in. But I was like, you know, as a movement and as spiritual teachers, is this really what we're being called to do, to teach people how to be better shoppers? Right. So I think in many cases, this consumer spirituality, which is what I call the mainstream pop culture spirituality of today.
Yeah.
I think many people believe that, oh, my calling is to do this big thing.
Yeah.
Buy this house, have this car, do this cool, glamorous thing.
Right.
Right. And, you know, that element of burden that you're talking about that is so essential to a real true calling is not even there. It's just about what can I acquire for myself?
Yeah, exactly.
Right? So I wrote this essay, I did this talk, and I mean, And, you know, all of this actually like came to me as soon as I got my license as a spiritual practitioner. I was like, oh my God, did I just spend 3-4 years of my life studying how to do this, practice consumer spirituality?
Oh, wow.
And I went through that whole talk about going dark night of the soul.
Yeah.
You know, I went there and I was like, oh my God, these teachers, all this stuff that I was learning that I'm so passionate about that I created a business on, this is all bullshit. You know, this is not spirituality. Like, because this is about the time, like, Trump had gotten into office. There was all this stuff going on.
Right.
You know, I was like, this doesn't add up.
Yeah.
You know, this doesn't add up. So I went a different direction, of course, as a nonconformist, as a misfit. Yeah. And I started studying Martin Luther King.
Yeah.
You know, and I started studying like, okay, what does he teach? What does he preach? And I was like, man, you know, what he talks about is so different from what we're talking about.
Yeah.
You know, even if I were to compare Abraham Hicks and, you know, Martin Luther King, I was like, this is different.
Yeah.
This is different content.
Yeah.
This is a completely different spirituality.
Yeah.
And so I started to study him more. And he talks about the three dimensions of life. And, you know, this is what I call them the three pillars of life. And mm-hmm. this is what I say divine confidence comes from, three pillars. And he says the first dimension is, and he says that you have to have a full, complete life in all three of these dimensions in order to live a full life.
Wow. Okay.
And that first dimension for him is the length of life.
Hmm.
How, this is about your personal self, your own goals in life as an individual. And I call this the pillar of self-actualization.
Hmm.
Like, what are you being called to do as an individual that is completely all about you? You know, not about your family, not about society. This is like, what do you, as a unique, 100% unique person, what do you need to do or want to do in this lifetime? What do you want to experience that would make you feel fulfilled in life, right? That's pillar one. Pillar two, I call it your pillar of social responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Martin Luther King calls this the pillar of breadth. It's the he calls it the breadth of life.
Mm.
This is not about yourself at all. This is about yourself as part of the collective, as part of society.
Yeah.
You know, what is your contribution, right? What is your contribution to life? That's pillar two. And then pillar three is the pillar of your relationship with spirit. And he called this the height of life, like this constant upward reach towards this God or creator, you know, source. Like, what is that relationship? And are you nurturing it? Do you have a relationship that's intimate?
Yeah.
And if it's not intimate, it's okay. But are you working on that relationship with God, you know?
Yeah.
And for me, these three pillars are essential to divine confidence and knowing, with, you know, what these three pillars mean for each individual. And I think at the core of these three pillars is where you begin to cultivate the true calling.
Yeah.
Because now you're touching base, not just with what you want as an individual, but what is society, like what's your contribution to the world? And then you add God into that and you're just like, wow, you know?
I love it. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and I am the concept of a consumer spirituality. If you look at the way most churches are set up, right? Mm-hmm. And in the traditional sense of how a church is set up today, you have about 3/4 of the room, maybe about 1/4 of the room is set up for one person.
Mm-hmm.
And that one person is elevated.
Mm.
And the rest of the room is set for everybody else to sit.
Right.
And it's like everyone sits down and watches this person on stage be an actual spiritual person. And we're like subconsciously being put into this place of consuming spirituality, right?
Right.
Yeah. Rather than, this is what I love about the rooms, the 12-step rooms, right? We sit in a circle, right?
Yeah.
We're all on the same. And this is what I think really means to be anonymous in an anonymous fellowship. It means it doesn't matter if you walk in as a millionaire person or you walk in and you just got 2 days sober. You're still at the same level. You're sitting on that hard chair and we're all in a circle looking at each other because we're all at the same level. But if you think about subconsciously, that room of a church where it's like, mm-hmm. we're reserving like a quarter of the room for that one person who's actually right. being spiritual. And the rest of us yeah. are just going to watch and hopefully yeah. get something out of it and keep right. it with us by the time we hit the parking lot, which
right.
sometimes doesn't happen. And so it right. is like, I think like that's a great challenge for spiritual teachers is to think about what our environments look like physically, you know? And I've talked to a lot of pastors of churches and I've tried to like communicate this, like,
yeah.
when you have this, you have a congregation, you have a parishioners, you have people who are coming to you for spiritual food, which is mm-hmm. an honorable place to be. Like to think about the way your room is set up, like physically, mm-hmm. are you subconsciously communicating that you're doing this mm-hmm. and they're just sitting there consuming it? And I think there's power in being at the same level. And like even just for a preacher to come off of the steps and be face level. It's harder to get that camera shot, but you know what I mean? Like at least we're eye level together, right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You know, those are the things that I grapple with as an entrepreneur as well.
Yeah.
Because the traditional business structure is hierarchical. It's top down. You know, you get your CEO and then everyone else who's serving the CEO that goes down. And, you know, business typically the way that, capitalism is done. And let me just define the difference. There's extractive capitalism. Mm-hmm. and you know, the business structure of a multi-global organization has completely different values and systems and ways of doing things than a mom and pop store or a small business.
Right.
Those are, they all fall under capitalism, but those should have, different words because they don't even operate the same, different values.
Yeah.
But primarily we largely operate within a global capitalist system. You know, there's big multinational corporations, 6 or 7, maybe 10 of them that pretty much control all of us in terms of food and media and all of that. Right. And, you know, so much of that is falling apart right now as we're seeing in our world right now. And that system is created with this hierarchical way. There's someone at the top and everyone serves that person at the top. People at the top get and gain everything while there's people at the bottom who are really suffering.
Yeah.
And so when I think about my business and, you know, I began asking myself the questions like, how am I operating in that way?
Yeah.
And what do I need to do to change? Like you're saying, you know, for you, you're talking about a church and the physical or, configuration.
Yeah.
I'm also thinking of the same thing as in my business. Like, what would a new physical configuration be if I'm, you know, the owner, the CEO, and how do I level it out?
Right.
You know, essentially.
Absolutely. Yeah. And then what you explained too, there's an old drawing called the chain of being. Have you heard of this? Mm-mm. The chain of being, and it's this drawing. You should look it up when you get a chance, and it's very hierarchical. You have the Godhead up top, and then you have the angels, and then you have man, and underneath man is animals, and under the animals is the, and all the way down to the bottom, you have Hades, right? Where people are suffering, right?
Yeah.
And the chain of being, which is very different from Paul Tillich's concept of the ground of being, right? That God is the ground of being, that God isn't the essence of life itself, right? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, that's a lot. If you don't consider culture and spirituality, then you're missing something, I think. And I'm glad that you're bringing up our current culture and how that's spiritual and how that affects us spiritually, because we should be aware of it and to know what's our part to do, how we participate, how we interact in culture, because to think that they're two separate worlds, I think is just, it doesn't help. So,
Yeah. Exactly.
How long have we been going? Where are we at? 50 minutes. All right. Well, this has been amazing. So loved this conversation. And I would love to have you, you know, come back and do some more conversations and talk to maybe some of the other people. We have a whole crew of people who host. And so, I would love to see you get in a conversation with some of our women hosts or female hosts and to talk more about this kind of divine confidence and what that is like for a woman to have that. Yeah, because I think that could be very beneficial for everyone who listens.
I'm down.
Yeah. Awesome. Cool.
Yeah. Anything? Thank you so much for having me. Yeah, this has been great.
No, my pleasure.